Okay, well, while this loads, thanks for having me here, and a quick word about the Program on Information Justice and Intellectual Property at American University. We look at intellectual property issues from a pro-consumer point of view. A lot of it has to do with access to medicines. I came from an access to medicines background before joining. I'm going to talk first about international IP obligations. I might kind of go quickly through some of that to get to the second part, which is going to be more about ACTA and the Special 301 efforts to enforce intellectual property through trade policy and efforts to push back against it. So the current intellectual property obligations are pretty much a product of lobbying by the copyright and pharmaceutical industries. If you go back to the 1970s and the 1980s, there was a push to create international minimum standards, which did not exist in the General Agreement of Tariffs and Trades. So there was no minimum IP rules, and there was no dispute, no well-working multilateral dispute settlement system. And because of this, they tried to bring the WTO into being with the TRIPS agreement, which has, you know, the 20-year minimum patents and other obligations. And if one country thinks another country is not agreeing with that, they now have, you know, dispute settlement with teeth. It also includes a number of flexibilities. There's compulsory licensing, which, you know, I was talking a lot about in the Thailand case, which is probably like the biggest trade dispute about that. There's also other things like parallel imports. There's no requirement for data exclusivity in the TRIPS agreement. WTO members can adopt measures necessary to protect public health. All of this was reaffirmed in 2001 at the Doha Ministerial by all governments, including the US. Quick word about compulsory licenses. We always hear about it in the context of the US government going after some usually middle-income country for issuing compulsory licenses for health. But they're like as old as patent laws. They're in the Paris Convention of 1885, I think, and it's like they're just a standard patent law thing. If you want an excellent source to see hundreds of them, go to Knowledge Ecology International's website. But it's only basically when countries do it on medicines when they're that they're labeled like IP scofflaws and so forth. So the IP owners didn't get everything they wanted in TRIPS. So a lot of the things that they wanted to get keep popping up in other fora. First of all, the FTAs, which are probably to go through pretty fast, but like some of the stuff like limitations on compulsory licensing were in early versions of TRIPS, and they were negotiated out of TRIPS. And so then you find them coming up with the bilateral FTAs. Another one is data exclusivity, which is a kind of extreme form of data protection. Basically, it's the period of time during which a generic competitor cannot rely on established clinical test data to win regulatory. And basically, it's another way to block generic competition, even in the absence of a patent, or if a patent has expired. And in the real world, it does raise prices. The two studies I'm aware of that have looked at empirical data after the passage of an FTA and after the implementation of the FTA are this Oxfam study and the CPATH study. In Oxfam found that data exclusivity blocked 79% of new medicines, or blocked generic copies of them, and it made medicines in Jordan more expensive, both in real terms and relative to neighboring countries. The Ellen paper showed price increases of 300 to over 800% in Guatemala as a result of data protection. There are other provisions that I'm just going to kind of gloss over really quickly. A kind of big one is linkage, which requires the establishment of a system to prevent health regulators from approving generic versions of patented medicines, which sounds kind of reasonable on its face, but it's a way that patent owners are able to game the system by submitting follow-on patents of dubious value. It's abused in the U.S. There was an effort to reform it in 2003. There's another one now. Patent extensions that can use patents. But a word about ACTA, it is like right now kind of like the big thing among IP owners. Like this is what they want. A lot of the other larger FTAs that cover you know, labor chapter, environment chapter, investment chapter. A lot of those have kind of stalled, but they're gung-ho on the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, which is all about IP enforcement and nothing else. It's portrayed by the government as an agreement to enforce existing obligations that won't affect access to medicines. A lot of people disagree. It's a plurilateral agreement among mostly developed countries and a few middle-income countries. Negotiations started in 2007. They're nearly done right now. They contain tougher enforcement rules than are found in the TRIPS agreement. And a lot of middle-income nations are upset that this is, like the EU and the US, after like going to bat and striking out at the WTO and at other multilateral organizations, namely WIPO, they're going off somewhere else and creating international norms on intellectual property where like everyone you want to do business will be involved, and then later on they'll try to expand those norms outwear in other forums. And finally, a lot of the provisions go after the producers and exporters as opposed to the consumers. Like instead of like going after compulsory licensing, there's some in a really resource poor country, it's more politically correct to go after, you know, an Indian manufacturer. It has tougher border measures than are found in the TRIPS agreement, including an obligation for countries to set up situations where IP owners can call border guards and have them seize goods, even if you're not getting imported into the country, which has been a problem in the EU later, as Noah referred to. There's third-party liability provisions in which people or companies that make active pharmaceutical ingredients could face trouble if they sell it to somebody else who then produces an infringing product. And now I'm going to start overlapping a little less. A lot of the trade pressures that you see are not through trade agreements, but harder to see behind the scenes stuff. Often it's threats carried out by the executive branch, like USTR, the Department of Commerce, Department of State, USPTO. It's the threatening and imposition of sanctions. Often these sanctions take the form of the removal of benefits under the General System of Preference or the Caribbean Basin Initiative benefits, and those are both programs in which developing countries could export to the United States with and face lower lower tariffs. But they're pretty widespread, and most countries that we're not mad at have them as long as they don't anger us. And blacklisting in Special 301 is a big one, too. This is one that my office has been doing a lot of work on recently. The Trade Act, as amended, says that the United States representative shall identify those foreign countries that deny adequate and effective intellectual property rights. This was added to the Trade Act in 1988 after a lot of heavy lobbying. Countries could be listed as priority foreign countries or be on a watch list. And if it's a priority foreign country, then the USTR has to launch a formal investigation within 30 days about whether or not it's going to seek sanctions. The other listings are a threat that they'll wind up there. And inclusion in the report is generally a sign of other actions behind the scenes, and it's a signal to foreign investors that they're in a trade dispute with the US. Special 301 report was created before the WTO's multilateral dispute settlement system. It was both a substitute for that and a way to push reluctant countries to agree to TRIPS, because countries that didn't want to sign on to higher IP rules thought they could probably do better in a multilateral system than facing the US 101. And as you can see from the graph, the priority foreign country listings have gone down significantly since the creation of the WTO. But the naming and shaming, the blacklisting, has increased. So there are countries are often included in the Special 301 report for many pro-health policies. It's the same sort of stuff that you see in the FTAs. If they issue compulsory licenses, they'll wind up in trouble. If they don't have data exclusivity, they'll wind up in trouble. If they don't have second-use patents or have linkage, that sort of thing. There are a lot of countries that are on the list every year. India and China being big producers of products that compete with US drug firms are always in the crosshairs. Brazil and Thailand are almost always there for compulsory licensing disputes. And in Thailand, it's weird because advocates have pushed USTR hard enough on Thailand that they have to be really awkwardly worded about it, because the USTR won't say that Thailand's doing anything wrong, but still feels it has to blacklist them. How much time do we have?
You're good.
Okay. This is just like an example of the sort of things that you see in the Special 301 report. It's typically like a 50-page report. About 20 of those pages is listings, like a paragraph for each country. Sometimes one or two countries will have a longer thing. But polite language, but it's basically just, I just included this as an example. Now here's an example, again from the CPATH report, of what can happen when a government responds to a 301 listing. The Ministry of Health was ordered to stop purchasing generic medicines after being listed in the 2008 Special 301 report, and so it started procuring branded drugs, which in all cases were a lot more expensive, but especially Keletra and Abacavir, or this is Lopinavir/R, otherwise known as Keletra. And you see they're over $1,000 per patient per year more expensive. Also this year, there was a AIDS activist in Brazil had sought a compulsory license on Keletra, and they were turned down. Among the reasons cited by the judge was that they were listed in the Special 301 report, and therefore they were in no position to do such a thing. Ecuador also earlier this year started the process by declaring drugs to be in the public interest and were put on the 301 list and did not follow through. So amidst all of this that's been going on forever, candidate Barack Obama says the right thing and President-elect Obama says the right thing. So a bunch of health activists approach him and say, let's talk. It's the U.S. Trade Representative. So we meet with the U.S. Trade Representative in 2009, and there were about 20 groups, Doctors Without Borders, Health Gap, Oxfam, and of course the American Public Health Association Trade and Health Forum. And there was a complete platform of changes we wanted to see, but relative to Special 301, we asked that U.S. trade policy forbid the use of threats and punitive actions such as listing in the Special 301 watch list and or withdrawal of generalized system of preferences benefits in response to a country's use of TRIPS safeguards and flexibilities. USTR called us back later on in December, and they said that they were about to start doing the Special 301 report, and they would like more input from health groups. Could we try to round them up? And that they would also have an open public hearing. And so the first thing to do was comments. Now, every year, the USTR solicits comments. So who should we put in the report? And anyone can submit, but it's usually mostly IP owners that do it, both firms and like trade associations. In 2008, there was a rule change where countries that had been on previous reports used to have to turn their comments in on the same day so they couldn't see the charges brought against them and then respond. The rule was changed in 2008, and the next year things shot up. And so this year, us and other public health groups, and also like consumer groups and internet groups, made a conscious effort to try to get more people to submit comments, and there were like tons more from individuals. In all honesty, a lot of that is copyright stuff. But also, you see nonprofits went from zero in 2009 and zero in 2008 and one in 2007 up to 26 in 2010. So there was a lot more participation. And in the hearing afterwards, there was a whole afternoon of like one group after another testifying. But on our submission, we brought up a lot of points saying that the Special 301 was against various obligations or interests of the United States. Obviously, the president's own stated policy, the 2001 Doha Declaration, which is agreed to by the United States, where they agreed to support the use of TRIPS flexibilities, commitments that as a member of the WTO, you will settle your disputes within the WTO and not unilaterally, we believe Special 301 violates that, and there's actually a panel ruling that says that just the threat of action not allowed by the WTO, like a unilateral trade section, is itself a violation of WTO rules. The Declaration of Helsinki is guidelines for human trials, which says that you can't repeat trials on humans if you know the outcome, and data exclusivity would force a generic firm to do that if it was to repeat the clinical trials. There's human rights obligations that say that we support the right to the highest attainable level of health, and the UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health has put out reports interpreting it as saying that TRIPS flexibility should be used, and countries like the U.S. should not try to prevent other countries from doing that. There have been a series of congressional policies, including a compromise in 2009, to try to lay off linkage, for one, and to just relax the sort of stuff that you see in FTAs. Best interests of the U.S. PEPFAR program, which is really another presentation in itself. Nobody buys more AIDS medicine than the U.S. government. We fund like half of the purchases, and we buy generics when we can. And most of the ones that are generic are first-line drugs. As people build up resistance, they're going to need the second-line drugs, which are like at least 7 times more expensive, sometimes I think up to 30 times if you're talking about salvage therapy. And at current funding levels, we just can't sustain the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief unless there's more generic medicines. So Special 301 should not be messing with generic producers. So April report comes out. It's mostly the same. There have been some small changes. There's much fewer instances of countries being listed for linkage, not having that link between the health regulatory authorities and the patent office. And I think it was if a country had signed an FTA that required it to have linkage, then it could be listed in the 301 report. But other than that, no more. There were fewer countries overall. I think there was like 36 in 2008, 39 in 32 in 2009, and 20 last year, countries listed for health stuff. Thailand, still in the Special 301 report, and of course the producing countries, the exporting countries, are still in it. In general, the USTR was a less responsive to pharmaceutical drug firms' input. They usually included like 3/4. They included only about half this year. So the year going forward, we're going to continue to try to work with USTR to get better. We think that at the basis of it, that they should not be using the unilateral trade tool to go after manufacturers. Other big upcoming policy debates are going to be the implementation of ACTA. The Obama administration claims that it's an executive agreement as opposed to a free trade agreement, and therefore they won't have to get it ratified through Congress. There's been surprisingly little pushback from Congress. Senators Wyden, Senators Brown have made some noise, and I believe that will probably escalate, and there will be a big fight over ACTA implementation end of this year, beginning of next year. And then they've also just started Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations very, very early. There's no text. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because it'll be the first one negotiated by the Obama administration. It'll be the first large one after ACTA, so we could see what comes up in the text when it finally does get tabled. Is there going to be a lot of ACTA-like enforcement stuff, or is it going to be more specific of TRIPS flexibilities? Final word on Special 301 report. Comments are open to everybody, and it's just a good opportunity to put pen on paper and get involved and tell your government what you think they should be doing. And so end of December or beginning of January, there will be a public request for comments, and people should do it. So thank you.
Thank you, Michael.